we get into relationship and there's this expectation or this belief, like if I just do everything I'm supposed to do as a man, my wife should be happy. My partner should just be happy. I remember I told Sylvie early in our relationship, half joking, but also kind of not joking. I said, babe, look, if you will just always be happy and thrilled, we'll be great. That's all I need from you. Just be happy and thrilled all the time. She was immediately not happy and thrilled.
That's
when
weird.
I said that.
That's weird.
Yeah, immediately that. So naturally then, in the face of all of that, it is so easy for us men to just be like, fuck it. In the moment, fuck it. I'm doing all of this. I'm holding all of this. It still ain't working. I don't know what to do here, so fuck it.
Who am I now? I didn't write this story. I didn't write who I was as a man. I just was kind of floating around aimlessly. I didn't have a circle of men that I trusted. That energetic connection with your brothers is something that's really important.
What is required from us in order to meet our partner, raise a family, or whatever it might be, emotional connection, emotional depth, we are taught is not associated with masculinity.
I've been in men's work for a long time. One of the common themes, as you know, is that men don't trust men and they don't have anyone that they can really respect and revere. I can't go do it on my own. I've got to be a lone wolf. The benefit of actually forging real friendships and real brotherhood where you can trust people and you can belong, the result of that, man, is amazing connections in my life, amazing business opportunities, collaborations, adventure.
But I needed masculine support. I needed other men to be a stand for what I wanted, hold me accountable for what I was trying to do. I knew that I could not do this journey alone.
Welcome to Men This Way with Brian Reeves and Tate Arendt. This is a Soulfire production. Tate, what's up, man?
Bri Y, what up, man?
What up, dude?
What up?
How you feeling? You good? A few
days away from heading to South Africa, so it's starting to get real.
That's right.
I'm excited about it, nervous
going
about
on
it.
Safari. Going on safari.
Cape Town for about 6 days, safari for about three, so... I'm lit up, brother. How are you?
I'm excited for you, man. Yeah, you're 50th. I'm also turning 50.
Yeah.
In a couple months later, I haven't quite figured out what my epic adventure is, but I'm excited for you, man.
Yeah, I'm excited for both of us, brother.
Yeah, you ready to dive into this topic today?
Am I ready? Well, the better question is, are you ready?
I'm always ready, man. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad. One of us has to be ready, so might as well be you.
I'm actually not ready, but we're going to do it anyway. So I'm ready. Let's dive.
All right.
Let's do it again. Let's dive. We're going to get that right eventually. Let's dive. Here we go. Okay, Tate, do you remember, gosh, man, this is, almost 20 years ago now, a little less than, I spent 5 years with a woman, hurting her almost every day for 5 years. Not intentionally, but simply by the fact that I wasn't fully choosing her.
I do remember. And I also remember the first 10 years of my marriage doing the same.
So, you know, I wrote a blog about that, which you also may remember.
Yeah.
Called Choose Her Every Day or Leave Her. The subject of our episode today, the topic of our episode today is presence. Presence in men, and particularly our lack of presence. Yeah. Certainly in intimate relationship, but how that shows up in other places, everywhere in our lives, potentially. But I want to start by just reading the first few paragraphs of that blog. That blog hit a nerve. You know, it's one of those blogs that I was writing so many blogs at that time that I forgot most of what I had written. And that blog blew up like 3 months after I actually wrote it.
Yeah, you wrote it, but published it. It sat there for a little while. And then all of a sudden you were like, wait a minute, what's happening?
Million people a day were reading that blog for a while. And so that really changed the game for me just professionally. But it also revealed for me a deep, deep pain that the world in many ways was carrying. And so I want to just start by reading the first few paragraphs and we'll launch from there.
Yeah.
I spent 5 years hurting a good woman by staying with her, but never fully choosing her. I did want to be with this one. I really wanted to choose her. She was an exquisite woman, brilliant and funny and sexy and sensual. She could make my whole body laugh with her quick, dark wit and short-circuit my brain with her exotic beauty. Waking up every morning with her snuggled in my arms was my happy place. I loved her wildly. Unfortunately, as happens with many young couples, our ignorance of how to do love well quickly created stressful challenges in our relationship. And before long, once my early morning blissful reverie gave way to the strained, immature ways of our everyday life together, I would often wonder if there was another woman out there who was easier to love and who could love me better. And as the months passed and that thought reverberated more and more through my head, I chose her less and less. Every day for 5 years, I chose her a little less. I stayed with her. I just stopped choosing her. And we both suffered. Mm. So that's where I'll stop. I certainly go more into the story. And so we're talking about presence.
Well, I think one of the things I just want to say that's so true to me about that is we often talk about the two hardest things that there, two of the hardest, maybe they're not the hardest, but two of the hardest things that there are for us to do as men is to consistently show up and to speak up. And our experience with men is that we know how to show up, but then we stop showing up, and then we might show up again and then stop showing up. And unfortunately, the people that are in our lives, when we are showing up and stop showing up, they don't know that we're countable. And when we do that in relationships, there's a tremendous lack of safety that gets created inside of that. Then there's turmoil that happens. And then we don't necessarily know how to speak up and talk about now the dynamics that start to be exchanged inside of that. And so what I'm just present to is how fucking real that blog mm-hmm. is. Mm-hmm. Whether or not you're just getting into a relationship, you're 5 years in or you're 50 years in, I think there is a struggle to figure out how to show up and speak up in ways that really honor what's going on for us and our partner. So I do think there's a universal truth inside
it. Well, I'm thinking of just was it yesterday? We heard from one of the men that we're working with right now. That, remember he said those words, "I thought I could count on him." We were talking about the ways in which we men were let down by older men in our youth, but the ways in which we were in some way exploited or dismissed or demeaned or criticized by older men as we were growing up, learning what it is to be a man. And I'll never forget that the guy told a story and the thing he said, "I thought I could count on him." And I think what happens for all of us men, we've been so let down by the elder men in our lives, right? We learn to not be able to count on men that in some bizarre and tragic twist of fate, we tend to then become men that can't be counted on.
Yeah.
By particularly in relationship.
And I think what you're pointing to by that story is trying to help us tap into why. Right? Why do we struggle to powerfully show up? And the first point you're, I think, really sharing is that there are not a lot of examples that we have in our life of when there have been consistent male presence that has been in our life, whether or not it's our fathers or family members or older mentors or whatever. Like it's very rare that we've had an example of a man who's consistently showing up in his life in all the ways that matter, right? Like people show up for their work. My father showed up tremendously for work and he tried to show up, but his generation was really revered as a provider generation. And that's the way he knew how to show up. But in these other ways, it was a real struggle. I think that why the first is we don't have examples. What one of the things that has always really, I don't know, created a phrase, the masculine checkout syndrome. And you know, that does also speak to why. So tell us more about the masculine checkout syndrome and why that leads to not powerfully showing up.
Yeah, I had made that observation quite a number of years ago now. And again, looking at my own life as inspiration for my own awakening into these challenges that men face. And
yeah.
So masculine checkout syndrome, I define masculine checkout syndrome. It's like my body is in the room. I'm physically present, but emotionally, maybe even mentally, I'm gone. I'm somewhere else. Either emotionally distant, you know, my emotions, my feelings, they have retreated. You know, I've retreated to that, what I call that masculine, that icy masculine tundra where nothing, no life can actually thrive. But, you know, hey, it's quiet there. Yeah, you know, I don't have to feel anything. And yet I can be in the same room with, for example, my intimate partner or even another male friend. I can just be in the same room, but you can't feel me. I'm gone. And this, you know, one thing that I want to acknowledge too is, you know, when we talk about not being counted on, I want to acknowledge that most men can be counted on in a crisis.
No, 100%.
You know, when shit really hits the fan, 100%. We'll fucking be there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I remember asking a guy once, I may have asked a group of men, I can't remember, but I remember asking this question, like, you know, who do you have to call when you really need someone? You know, do you have anybody that you can really call when you need them? And I remember this guy saying, oh yeah, I've got a bunch of people that I can call in a crisis. I was like, well, when was the last time you had a crisis which you needed to call them? He's like, damn, I actually don't remember. Years? I'm not sure I ever have. And so what we're talking about is the daily showing up, you know, that showing up, consistency. You use that word, consistency. And we men in our everyday lives, because life is challenging. There's so many problems, especially these days, probably surely forever. But these days, the complexity of what we're carrying in our brains in our modern lives is overwhelming.
Oh man. And I think it is hard to argue that more is being expected of men in our society today than at any point in history ever before. And it's also true that more is being expected of women. But what I want to, so it's not, this is not a mutually exclusive conversation, but just to really acknowledge men are, yes, largely still going out there. And again, women are stepping into provider role, but men have generationally taken on the belief that they need to be making a living. We have a very dear friend that's a stay-at-home dad and struggles with that, because just societally the appreciation of that is not where it needs to be. So we need to be providers. We also now have relational expectations about how to show up in intimacy with skills that we've never been taught before on how to do that. Yeah. We need to be able to show up as fathers in the world and how to really be the fathers that our kids are needing us to be. Not necessarily the father that I want to be, but I think about Alexa and Tate, what is the kind of father that I need to be? Then I have my own personal growth and development that I'm trying to show up for. I have my own desires and habits and hobbies that I really want to be leaning into. So now more than ever, men are being asked to show up in every way. Yeah. And it's really hard to show up at 100% in every aspect of our life, but the expectation seems to be there. And the weight of that is sometimes too much to carry.
Now, throw on top of all of that, we're in, again, we're approaching this largely through the frame of intimate relationship, but certainly the impact and our experience of lack of presence can and does filter throughout our entire lives. But just through the frame of intimate relationship, first off, we men, we're not taught we're not really taught connection when we're younger. If anything, we're taught disconnection.
Yeah.
We're taught to not connect to ourselves, to disconnect from our own emotions, disconnect from our own feelings, put our own needs aside or suppress them, right? Men aren't supposed to have needs. We're taught to value, especially in the West, hyper independence, right? Don't depend on anybody. Don't allow yourself to need
pull
anybody.
Pull yourself up by your own bootstraps.
By your own bootstraps, exactly. Yeah. And then on top of that, let's throw even some more on top of this. the very primal dance of masculine and feminine values, the masculine value of freedom.
Yeah.
And how on a very primal level, typically we men, women too in their own way, but typically men tend to be a stand for freedom, the value of freedom. And that can mean different things to different people, but just in relationship, the tension between freedom, connection, the feminine value of connection, like on the surface, yeah. they seem yeah. mutually exclusive. You're either free or you're connected. Which is it? And yeah. that's another tension that men regularly feel in relationship. Because we don't know how to do connection, and we tend to be a stand for freedom first. We tend to feel connected when we feel free first.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So anyway,
yeah. And in today's world, when we're really being asked to by ourselves to have 100% freedom and to be 100% connected, that how in the world? I often tell the story of, you know, Mission Impossible. How yeah. sacrificing mission, the masculine rarely, if ever, really will sacrifice mission for relationship. He's for being asked yeah. to always do it the other way around. Yeah. I think that that's really compelling and true.
Yeah.
But in a modern time, why do we struggle to powerfully show up all the time? Yeah. Because we're trying to show up for freedom and connection. And that's not an easy balancing act to try to skate that razor's edge.
Even reminded of Game of Thrones. Remember the men on the wall in the north?
The Night's Watch.
Their whole motto was love is the death of duty.
Yeah.
Love is the death of duty. And they were doing the most noble thing of all, which is was sacrificing everything for duty. Like that was held up as this high ideal. Same in Mission Impossible. Tom Cruise, he can't have a wife because he has to save the world. Like that's written into the plot. So anyway, we get into relationship and now, you know, and there's this expectation or this belief, like if I just do everything I'm supposed to do as a man, my wife should be happy. My partner should just be happy. I remember I told Sylvie early in our relationship, half joking, but also kind of not joking. I said, babe, look, if you will just always be happy and thrilled, we'll be great. That's all I need from you. Just be happy and thrilled all the time. She was immediately not happy and thrilled.
That's
when
weird.
I said that.
That's weird.
Yeah, immediately that. So naturally then, in the face of all of that, it is so easy for us men to just be like, fuck it. Yeah. In the moment, fuck it. I'm doing all of this. I'm holding all of this. It still ain't working. I don't know what to do here. So fuck it. I'll stay in the room. That, you know, that's masculine checkout syndrome. I'll either actually leave the relationship or leave, or I'll stay in the room. Why? Because that's my fucking duty.
Right.
That's the duty. I'll kill love, but it doesn't matter. I'm doing my duty.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, she's over there on the other side going, you're here, but you're not fucking here.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, in my case, I'm in the room, but I'm not connected in the ways that she really needs me to be. I'll never forget. This is, I don't know, 7 years ago or so. You love to tell this story because it was
one of my favorite stark moments.
My wife and I are having a difficult conversation, two really young kids standing downstairs in our family room. And for 45 minutes, we had a conversation about what wasn't working in our relationship and things that we needed to do to improve it. And, you know, I come to the end of a 45 minute conversation and my wife says to me, I just don't feel connected to you. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, I just spent 45 minutes talking about us, talking about our relationship, talking about what we could do to improve. Like, I'm in the same room as you. What? I'm not doing any. What do you mean?
Yeah.
And I was so baffled.
It's like, that's the dumbest shit ever.
I was so baffled because, you know, what I didn't realize at the time is that when I'm in solving mode, which I have a tendency to go into, is trying to solve the problem that's being presented to me. And if my wife is talking about problems in the relationship, I'm going to jump in and solve it. Solving is not connecting. Solving is not meeting, attuning to, connecting with what she's actually saying and letting her know that her feelings matter to me. I had no idea how to communicate those things. And so, you know, one of the things that we laugh about often is maybe sometimes unskillfully, but thank God we have feminine partners that will find ways to communicate to us and call us into our greatness, I would say, again, not always in skillful ways, but one of the things I'm curious to hear from you is like, what have you heard either in your own life or what do you hear men say, the messages that they're getting from their women to let them know that they're not being as fully present as their partners need them to be?
Yeah. Before I go into that, I want to acknowledge and really underscore something you just said about going into fix it mode, solve it mode.
Yeah.
But when I've worked with couples over these years, one of the things that I'm often teaching them is connection, how to connect. And I'm often I want to say reminding, but actually they've never heard this before, that connection time is not productive time.
Mm. Yeah.
When you're connecting is not about getting shit done.
Yeah.
And you know, we think, again, we're having a conversation, we're solving, there's a problem. Clearly you're upset. There must be a problem that has to be solved. Let's fucking solve it. I still do that to this day. I'm still tempted with Sylvie when she's expressing an upset. I'm like, well, babe, this is what we need to do. Have we thought about this? Have we thought about that?
And right,
she just,
I get it.
She gives me that look that, like, you know, it was like waving off an airplane landing. And it's like, oh shit, fuck, I'm sorry. Let me take a breath. Right.
Back up.
This is not solving time. This is just connecting time. Got it.
Yeah.
So, which is just so, it's just so not for most of us men, that's just a foreign concept. So,
for sure.
So what are some of the things men hear? So, like, I mean, your wife said it to you, I don't feel connected to you.
Yeah.
Just that, right? I don't feel connected to you, or you're not listening, or I don't know how to reach you, or. Yeah.
These sound familiar.
Have you heard these? That's because we came up with these from our own lives. You're in the room, but it's like you're not here.
Yeah.
You know, or just you're checked out. Or, you know, this is one that look, as we're sharing these, like, I'm not saying that these are skillful ways of that our partners give us feedback. A lot of this is very unskillful. It's very in our business. But what we're speaking to here is how does the feedback come, whether skillfully or otherwise, whether we want to hear it this way or not? What are some of the clues that we can get? Because a lot of times us men, like, I don't know that I'm checked out. I'm just doing my thing.
Right.
I'm just doing my thing. And my thing is solving problems for the most part.
And what I have to remind myself of is that if I'm listening for the love and really trying to understand what my wife is trying to do, she's trying to let me know that I'm important to her, that I matter to her, that I'm a gift to her. And she's not saying it that way. But I do believe that the feedback that we're getting from our feminine partners, I do use this term intentionally, that they are calling us into our greatness. Because I do believe that when we learn how to be more powerfully present in our intimate relationship, we are more powerfully present with the other men in our lives and with our children and within the world of work. Like, when we can practice it in one domain, it does carry over into others. And they're a demand that we step into our greatness. And there are some other conversations that I need to learn how to have about helping my wife share these messages with me in a way that really I don't have to be triggered by. But if I'm listening for the love, they're the breadcrumbs that are helping me find my way.
Like that language, listen for the love. One of the ways I like to approach it is listen beneath the level of the complaint.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, if the complaint is you, like, for example, one of the ways that men will often hear this feedback is like, you don't care about me.
Right.
Right. You care more about XYZ than our relationship.
Yeah.
I've heard that before. That is an immediate, my immediate visceral reaction is fuck you to that. Cause I'm immediately defensive because I know it's not true. Like, you know, these are one of my non-negotiable boundaries. I mean, in my relationship, you know, and Sylvie and I have talked about this over the years, and she's really great. But I had to set some boundaries with her at the very beginning because, maybe another conversation for another podcast, right? Boundaries. But most women have come into my business and told me what they think I care about.
Yeah.
And that's so irritating. But when I'm listening beneath the level of the complaint, what I'm really hearing, I'm hearing the vulnerability underneath, or the love underneath that says, I don't feel cared about. I feel scared. I feel hurt. I feel alone. I'm, you know, the feminine, one of the distinctions I like to work with is the masculine, what I call the masculine objection and the feminine objection. These two arguments, that these objections that can arise in any relationship argument. The masculine objection is, don't tell me what to do. And the feminine objection is, don't leave me alone in this. Don't abandon me in this.
Yeah.
And we never say, it never comes out those exact languages. Well, that's not true. Sometimes the masculine is just straight up, don't fucking tell me what to do. It can be pretty militant, right? The feminine objection doesn't really, she rarely says, don't leave me alone in this. What she's often saying is, yeah, you care more about something else than about me. Hmm. Or, you know, you're checked out.
Yeah.
You're here, but you're not really here.
Right. Right.
You know, or you're not getting it. Things like this.
And I think that what we don't necessarily hear or not really clued into until we look beneath the level of the complaint is, what is the actual impact that the lack of our presence is having? Mm-hmm. Right. What's the impact to ourselves and to our partners? And again, we're having this conversation in some ways in the relational realm, but as a father. Like one of my most shameful memories is when both of my kids were really, really young. And my wife nursed, but she also, you know, there were bottles that I could give the kids, is being with my kids, feeding my kids, but also scrolling on my phone. Even as a child, not really tapping in eye to eye contact with my kids when they were that age. Did I do that all the time? Of course not. But as I think back about the presence that my kids needed then and my kids need now, when I'm lost in my head thinking about my day, or I'm thinking about the week that I'm heading into, or I'm thinking about the problem that I'm trying to solve, and I'm sitting in front of my daughter, we're having a meal together and I'm not really attuned to her, there's an impact to her. There's an impact to employees that I work with. There's an impact. So I think that one of the things we have to be willing to do as men is look at, what is the impact that our actions and our lack of presence is having on ourselves and to the people that we care about most. So talk to us a little bit about what you see as the impact.
We'll think also about you and me, our lack of presence with each other throughout most of our adult lives until we really reconnected in our mid-30s-ish or early to mid-30s.
Yeah.
But the lack of being present, we would talk with each other, but we weren't present with what each other was going through. Mm. We weren't attuned. Both of us are just winging it, man, surviving any way we knew how, getting into all kinds of trouble, causing all kinds of trouble for ourselves.
Yeah, right.
That the mindful presence of another person might have helped us navigate differently.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? So what are the costs, the impact of a lack of presence? Well, again, in the intimate relational space, the number one cost is a lack of safety.
Yeah.
And I think that's surprising and maybe even objectionable to a lot of men, because, I mean, the first objection that most men will come up with is, well, what do you mean? Don't hit her.
Yeah.
I'm not a danger. She knows I'm not going to hit her.
Yeah.
Right? So most men equate safety with physical safety. And that's certainly important.
Yeah.
What we don't get about safety, particularly in intimacy, is that emotional safety is something that also has to be tended to. And, you know, you said earlier, like, we men are carrying, there's so much being expected of us. I definitely have great compassion for men in intimate relationship. We get beat up a lot in therapy rooms and in culture for, you know, how we do intimacy. And we weren't prepared to be nurturing. Our fathers and ancestors did not generally do that well, hasn't been passed down to us. And all of a sudden it's being expected of us.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a bad thing. I just have compassion for us. But we don't understand what emotional safety, even intellectual, mental safety, what is required, how that's created, I should say.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I am often pointing out to men is that, again, men and women, we tend to experience safety differently.
Mm.
Like, I remember being at Tony Robbins, I think it was his date with Destiny. I don't remember if you might have seen this this demonstration. I think Alison Armstrong actually originated this. I think Tony borrowed it from Alison Armstrong. Borrowed slash stole, same thing. And when he asks all the men in the room, you know, there was like 2,000 people. So he asks all the men in the room, if you felt unsafe in the last week, at any point in the last week, if you felt unsafe, raise your hand.
Five
dudes rose their hand out of 1,000. Yeah. And then he asked the women the same question.
And all but five.
A thousand hands went up.
At least, yeah.
That moment was profoundly revealing for me. It just hadn't occurred to me that women live with, they live in the world, they live in a world where they constantly feel unsafe.
Hmm.
And now I'm just expecting her to just feel safe with me because I'm not going to hit her, right? And so first off, she's bringing an experience into the room with me where she's already not feeling safe.
Yeah.
And now on top of that, if I don't know how to be connected to myself, to be present with what I'm feeling, what I'm going through, what's true for me, you know, one of the things that I think drives women absolutely crazy, and by the way, I like to say that women are only crazy because men are so clueless. And this is one of the ways that we are clueless. You know, that you ever been asked by your partner, why are you so angry? And then you're like, I'm not fucking angry. You know, through gritted teeth, you know, veins popping out of your neck. I'm not angry. Yeah. You know, some kind of, well, that's an example of us not being present with ourselves.
Yeah.
And if we can't see that something's going on over here and speak to it, she can't trust us.
Yeah.
She can't trust that we're aware of the situation. So she has to defend herself. And women will do that. They'll either do it by shutting down or by putting up their own, you know, bringing up their own masculine warrior stance to protect themselves. And so anyway, you know, lack of safety is the first casualty of a lack of presence.
Well, and you're pointing to that in the relationship space. I think one of the things that I'm really present to is bringing it just back into the man himself, right? What's the lack of a powerful presence? Well, men are interested in something in the world. They're up to something. They want to accomplish something. They want to be something. One of the conversations that we have in our Elevate Your Relationship program is really around how do we help men stand in their power? Mm. And part of the way that men really have an opportunity to stand in their power is through the habits that they have, the patterns that they're living out as a part of their life. And the easiest thing that there is for us to do as men in the world is just to continue doing what we're doing. It's, in some ways, it's the greatest desire that we have is just never have to change anything ever again. Right. Let's just have what we have and let's just keep doing what we're doing. My dad, right, he got told by my mom back in the 1970s that was going to be the last house that they had to move in. And he's been resentful for the last two moves because he thought that he was never going to have to move again. So I understand the desire there, but it's easy for us to have to continue. But you ask a man, every man is really aware of, look, what's one thing that you're not doing now that if you started to do on a regular basis would have you be able to stand in your power more? That's another way of saying, how could you really be more powerfully present in your life? Every man is aware of at least one thing that he knows he wants to start doing because he believes that there's something that needs to be addressed. And there's a real opportunity that if he were to step into it, something new could be created in his life. And every man is also aware there is probably something that he's doing that's sabotaging him. Every man is doing something that isn't serving him, procrastinating, putting things off, you know, sacrificing what he wants most for what's giving him pleasure in the moment. We all are numbing out in some way. And the ways that we're numbing out, the impact of that is that we don't get to feel as fully enlivened as we want, right? So before we even are talking about a man trying to figure out how to show up well in a relationship, how is he standing in his power? That's why we foundationally, we start there in our program. Because we want men who are fully enlivened, who are powerful in their own life, because when they're powerful in their own life, then they can lean into their intimacy lives and start to show up in ways for their partners where safety does get addressed. But when he's not doing it, I know from my own life experience, the guilt, the shame, the remorse, the not feeling like I'm good enough because I've had this thing that I've wanted to do, or I've had this thing that I've been doing for too long. And either way, I don't know how to start or stop those things. Like just sitting with the, no wonder when then we want to numb out. We don't want to feel those bad feelings. So there's this perpetual cycle and impact of us not actually being present on us that hits every person that loves us the most.
Well, and I see the, you're pointing to the downward spiral that as we are not connected to ourselves, not present with ourselves, with our own feelings, emotions, desires, needs, sensitivities, ambitions, all of that, whatever, as we're not present with ourselves, we sacrifice our enlivenment, our aliveness. And then we show up in relationship, again, coming back to relationship, we show up there and our partners can feel our lack of enlivenment. They can feel, which is, again, it's felt as a lack of presence. And anyway, even when we are in, even I remember when I met Sylvie, I was so fucking lit up by my life. I was like cranking on all cylinders. And so I entered that relationship with her. I was 41 and I just entered that like on full fucking tilt speed. I was just cranking, man, loving life. And she was drawn in by that. And then of course, within a very short period of time, we started running into our stuff, right? Because she would still get angry sometimes. She would still have emotions I didn't want her to have. She would be less than happy and thrilled sometimes. And I couldn't handle, I didn't know what to do with that. I didn't know. Right, and then see those moments I would check out. Like, fuck this. You know, my pattern was I'm going to cross my arms, turn away from you because fuck that. Mm. I do not understand what you need. I don't know what you want. I don't want to give it to you because no one gave it. You know, the subtext is no one ever gave me presents. Yeah. No one ever comforted me as a kid. Nobody ever helped me feel okay in my emotions. Why the fuck should I? It's almost like the blueprint didn't get built out in my system to be able to offer that to someone else. And I know that's not true for every man, but that was certainly my case.
Well, and you're pointing to the fact that, you know, what happens for me also, I get stuck in the adolescent. I get stuck in my child, banging on the table, wanting what I don't have and what I don't know how to give. And I act like a baby sometimes. That's just unfortunately the truth. And again, it's not because I don't want to do better. It's because I don't know how. There hasn't been a model for me. And so this is where I think it's so critical, right? We can talk about the reality of the pain and the difficulty and the why men check out and even the impact of it. But what really matters most is that we're equipped with skills that we can now start practicing. How do we start practicing some different ways of being present? And it's not about changing everything. It's about changing one thing. If we're able to change one thing. So let's even just talk about the word presence, powerful presence. What does that even mean?
There's so much more I want to explore, even in the impact and the shame and all that. But I think this is a good time to dive into that. What the hell does it even mean?
Right. It's like a foreign presence. I'm in the same room as you.
let me pull out my dictionary, see if there's a definition. You know, as I've been doing this work for many, many years, and I've worked with a lot of women, not just coaching them, but being coached by them, being taught, you know, some of my teachers. You know, presence, what I've come to understand about presence. You know, one of my teachers, Steve James, he gave me a great definition of intimacy that I think speaks to profound presence. And it is simply, intimacy is seeing what is there to be seen and feeling what is there to be felt. Feeling what is there to be felt. Seeing what is there to be seen. When I'm not present, I'm not paying attention to what's actually happening in the room. I'm wanting to ignore whatever my wife might be going through. I'm wanting to just tend to other things because I don't want to be with whatever the hell that is over there. Essentially. But when I'm being present, I'm paying attention. I'm offering attention.
Yes.
Paying attention is a weird term. It's like a cost. I'm to pay something, but offering my attention, I'm offering my presence. I'm one of the things that I'll often do when I start to argue with my wife, when I'm not being present, when I go into the, to whatever stories that take me out of being present, you know, whether it's frustration, some anger, I'll cross my arms and turn away from her. You know, it's like I'm defending myself and I'm preparing for battle. And my body's in the room, but again, I've just checked out.
Yeah.
And she can feel that. So one of the things I do to bring myself present is I'll turn towards her, drop my arms, and take a deep breath.
Yeah.
All right. Now I'm bringing presence into my own body by just breathing, by also just noticing actually that my arms were crossed. I'm starting to now be present to what is actually happening in the room. And now from there, now I'm looking at my wife. I'm watching her face. I'm seeing I'm hearing the tone of her voice, right? I am seeing what is actually here in this moment to be seen and feeling what is actually here to be felt.
Yeah.
Just oftentimes that alone, just that willingness to turn towards her, take a deep breath, relax my arms, relax my body, breathe deeply. Focus, offer my attention to her, just be present. A lot of times, like most of the times, saying something isn't even necessary and often just gets in the way.
Yeah.
But she can feel, now she's feeling my presence such that, oh, she's feeling safe. It's a very primal reaction. It's a response that it's like I'm communicating to her through my body, through my eyes, through, you know, softening my stance while also though holding a strong attention towards her. On a very primal level, she's like, well, holy shit, he's with me.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it. He's with me.
Yeah. What I hear you saying is actually that the attention portion is the physically, right? You're in the room and you're pointed towards her. You're looking at her. You're listening to her. You're not lost in your head about things.
Right.
You have your attention. You're ears are perked up, your eyes are present, you're engaged. Think about it like the Jedi mind trick, right? Like Luke, the Jedi's were not looking at the people. They were like so tuned in they were tapped into their soul in some ways. But what I also hear you saying is that attunement. It's like you're checked into you. And you're checked in, you're attuned to them, your feelings, your body sensations, their feelings, their body sensations. And again, what I don't hear you saying is going into a story about it, like making up, oh, well, this is what's happening, or being triggered by something in your past. It's like you're attentive and attuned.
Well, and I'm also not, you know, I'll try to do the Jedi mind trick on her sometimes. And that's the, you know, trying to get her to see something a certain way. So I'll play that game for a minute until it blows up in my face, because it only always does. You know, the Jedi mind trick is like trying to get her to see things my way. That's what the Jedi mind trick is, right? There are no droids here. That's the famous, there are no droids here.
And I just meant from the present side.
No, I get it. But that's the funny thing about that analogy is that it's still, I can act like I'm being present and still not be present. I can stay calm. I can look at her. I can put my arms down, but I can still be in my agenda versus being present.
Yeah.
Being present doesn't have an agenda other than to just, okay, let's be with what's here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That's presence, being with what is here in this moment.
Yeah. Well, and I guess what I'm also hearing you say is there, the third aspect, I guess, of being powerfully present is being calm, right? Being grounded, being centered, again, think about not being triggered, but it's really like you're tuned in and you're calm and relaxed and you're available for what might be showing up. It doesn't mean that you stay calm forever and ever more, but there you're bringing a calm presence to what's happening in the moment.
You know, it occurs for me like it's may or may not be calm, but what I am when I'm present is I'm an open space for everything that's in the room, including if I'm angry. I think, you know, sometimes some of my most skillful moments of being present is just being able to say, you know what? I feel really fucking angry right now.
Yeah.
I'm really angry.
And saying it in a calm way, by the way.
Well, that's the thing. You're right. That's right. No, saying in a calm way. Yeah, definitely. I think, man, nobody gets this perfect.
No, that's right.
I've never met anybody who doesn't fucking get upset sometimes. Not a fucking person. I've worked with some amazing people on the planet. You know, some of our most spiritual luminaries, you know, like Marianne Williamson, Byron Katie. Like, I've been in the presence of some of these amazing people and I've seen them lose their shit.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And just, I want to caution us against like calm as an ideal.
Yeah.
But rather being a space holder for all. I just mean being able to be a witness and allow to my state, to her state.
Yeah.
Right. So we, in our Elevate Your Relationship program for men, we talk about like these three skills of powerful presence. Stand in our power.
Yeah.
And we're really talking about the first and the third. Stand in our power is the first. Elevate our thoughts is the second.
Yeah. Yeah.
We could talk about that briefly. And embrace intimacy. So we're talking about embracing intimacy. Embrace intimacy means being with what is in the room in this moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Not locked up in our heads about things, which is where I have a tendency to live, but being tapped in. This is where, when you said, you know, you're angry right now, I don't get that as much as I get a question, how are you doing? And my answer is almost always, I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm fine.
Yeah.
But when I really, when I'm asked that question and I really tap into that and I say, you know what? I'm actually thirsty. My mouth is dry. I feel tension in my shoulders. I'm feeling anxious. I'm feeling excited. I'm feeling hopeful. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how I'm doing actually. Like having all of those things happen at the same time. Now my wife can trust me because I'm actually saying something that she can understand, that she can hear. I'm fine is a bullshit answer almost 99.9% of the time. It's a bullshit answer. It's me being locked up somewhere and not really be attuned to what's happening with me. Yeah. I'm never just fine. There's a variety of shit that's happening inside of me at any given moment. And if I'm not tapped into it, attuned to it, she can't count on me to be intimate with her in that moment.
That's it. Can't count on me. Can't count on me. And the thing that I really want to impress upon men and women listening is that we do have this ideal, especially men, I think. Women may occur for many of them differently, but I know many of them have this ideal as well, that like when we're doing this well, it's like what I said to my wife, we're just going to be happy and thrilled all the time. Right? There's going to be no disharmony ever. I call that masculine utopia. We have no problems here. That is a purely masculine representation of utopic. No problems here. All the problems have been solved. Nothing we have to do. And that's just not a real place that we humans will ever get to live in. And so being present doesn't necessarily, or maybe even ever, make all your problems go away.
Yeah.
But being present does is it allows the fullness of both you and whether it's an intimate partner or a friend or a family member, it allows the fullness of you and them to be in the room.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I think you're pointing to that I'm profoundly experiencing right now with something that my daughter is going through. Yesterday, she shared something with me that was just heartbreaking. And at the end of it, I didn't say much to her other than to say, you know, what happened is not your fault. And you didn't do anything wrong. Mm. And I'm here. I'm sorry. And I love you. And that's pretty much all I said. And at the end of the conversation, she said, out of everybody that I've told, you're the one that listened the best. Mm. And so what I'm reminded of, you know, you profoundly changed my life maybe 5 years ago when you shared with me right in front of you before you go and have, you know, conversations or coaching sessions, you have these three things. And one of them is your presence is a gift.
Yeah.
This reminder, that's right. Because sometimes the things that I think that I need to say or do are nothing in comparison just to have my presence be there.
Yeah.
So my you know, we get taught and told that we actually have to perform in order mm-hmm. for us to get love as men.
Mm-hmm. We have to earn it.
We have to earn it.
Yeah.
But what if what was really required of us is that we just needed to be there? We just needed to be present. And when we got tapped into, when I got tapped into, because you introduced this idea that my presence is a gift, then I get to just show up.
Mm, yep.
I get to just show up. I don't have to show out. I don't have to impress. I don't have to do a song and a dance. But if I show up for my daughter, for my wife, for my work, for my clients, for this world, then I'm bringing the gift that there is for me to bring, and I don't have to do anything else with it.
Yeah. You know, yeah, thank you for re-presencing that, because that too has been transformative for me, that presence is a gift. I mean, look, I'm thinking about my own father. Hmm. I'm not in relationship with my father right now. And look, there's a lot that could be said about that. One of the things that my dad just stopped showing up a long fucking time ago.
Hmm.
You know, as you're talking, what I'm aware of is, like, I don't have to do this perfect. Just show up. And my dad doesn't have to do shit perfect. Just fucking show up. And he stopped showing up years ago. And I remember he said something to me in one of our conversations as I was over, you know, the last 5-7 years, I've been trying to pull him back into relationship with me. He's like, well, you know, you don't need me. Mm. I'm like, the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
You're my father. The fuck you mean I don't need you? But he doesn't, you know, for whatever reason, that's his story and he's sticking to it. Because yeah. I'm successful. I'm married. I've got a
no, but it's because he doesn't know, he thinks that he has to perform and he doesn't know how to perform for you anymore.
That's yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's no performance that he can offer. He doesn't understand that I just need your presence.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I mean, again, we talk about the impact. My father, I don't have a relationship with him. He doesn't have a, I'm a cool fucking dude. My dad is missing out on hanging out with a cool mofo because he completely is not present and doesn't know how to show up.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll just want to round home base here by you know, speaking to my relationship with Sylvie, my relationship with you, my relationship you know, the people that matter most to me is, and I'll just, you know, share about my wife though, specifically, it's fundamentally different than anything I've ever experienced before. And it's not because she's somehow this magic creature, like she's, you know, happy and thrilled as my fantasy would have had her be. No, she's all over the map emotionally. It's because, look, and she's amazing.
Yeah,
right. Let me not take all the credit.
Extraordinary.
I'll just take my part. She owns so much of the responsibility for why I think our relationship is fundamentally different. But I also know how to be powerfully present in a way that I never understood before.
Yeah.
Now let's be clear. I fail every day.
Me too.
Every single day I have my moments where I maybe just in a moment I check out, or I just can't fucking deal with whatever's happening in front of me right now.
Yeah.
But I do have skills to come back into presence.
Yeah.
Some of the things that we've shared with you, with our listeners today, you know, even just like the way I breathe and hold my body and look at her, my posture.
Yeah.
Right. I have skills. I have awareness that when I lack presence or lose presence, or I hear the feedback from her that she misses me in this moment. And she'll say that. That's one of the things she'll often say is, I miss you. And I'll be like, the fuck are you talking about? I'm right here. Same thing. Right, she doesn't say, I don't feel connected to you. She says, I miss you.
I miss you.
We're literally in bed next to each other. And she'll say, I miss you. What? But I understand now what she's talking about.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And so it becomes more of a playful engagement rather than an adversarial, fuck you talking about, you know, argument. So, yeah, that's my story.
Yeah. Mine is not dissimilar. One of the things that is true for my wife and I, we are sometimes two ships passing in the night. I travel a bunch for my work and I'm on the road and, you know, we've got this beautiful work that we get to do and I'm taking care of kids and she's running coaching business and doing really amazing things with successful women in the world and managing our home is. So we had two ships passing the night. We were literally sending each other meeting notices to notify where each of us are at any given moment. But the end of each day, whether or not I'm in town or out of town, we spend 5 minutes with each other and we ask each other two questions. How did you feel loved by me today? And where did I miss the mark? That is a call to our presence, the ways that we are being present that matter and the ways that we could show up differently for one another. And at the end of that, we say a short prayer for one another, ultimately a prayer of thanksgiving for who she is for me, who I am for her, the family that we have, the life that we're getting to live. And that is a moment that we get to have every single day. And I used to think that, well, my presence, well, I have work and I have, what do you mean you need? Sometimes 5 minutes that is done every day is the greatest gift that we can be giving to each other. And, you know, I really credit my wife because she was a stand for that as a connection ritual. Yeah. And it makes all the difference in the world for our presence in each other's lives.
Well, I think that's a key thing to point out as well, is that we don't have to be present every minute of every day. And I don't even believe that that's possible.
Right,
it's not, or even advisable. I wouldn't even advise it. You got to go fucking live your independent life also. Jesus.
Freedom.
but taking intentional time every day, non-productive time to just connect, whether it's 5 minutes or 30 minutes or a time you choose at the end of the day, beginning of the day, or you just make sure you sprinkle it throughout the day.
Yeah.
But making presence intentional is absolutely game changing.
Yeah.
You know, as I often remind couples I work with, if when you know how to stay connected to create connection, you can get through anything.
Yeah, that's right.
But if you don't know how to create connection, you might not be able to get through almost anything. Just not knowing how to load the dishwasher will fuck you up for months, years to come.
Literally.
How'd we do? How'd we do, Tate?
I have no idea. I have no idea how we did, but I love having these conversations with you, and I hope they serve the world out there in some even small way. And it's just such an honor to do it.
Same. I never know. We never know. So, but to our dear listeners, before you rush off this podcast into whatever other content or busyness is waiting for you, we challenge you to take a few moments to reflect on what you've heard here. Remember, our formula is awareness plus action equals transformation. So, what is one insight that you're taking away with you from this conversation? And what's one action that you're going to take as a result of what you've heard here today? We genuinely want to know. And you can email either of us or both of us directly at brian@mendthisway.com. Remember, it's Brian with a Y @mendthisway.com and Tate, spelled T-A-I-T @mendthisway.com. I am Brian Reeves, Brian with a Y Reeves.
And I am Tate Arend.
Yes, you are. And thank you so much for joining us on Mend This Way.